Welcome to IntelliCast, powered by Skip.
Welcome to another episode of Skip IntelliCast, a podcast about strategy, intelligence, and leadership. I'm Cam Mackey with Skip, and today we'll be talking with Alex Baron-Poria of Ivy Exec. For those of you who don't know, Alex is co-founder and chief growth officer of Ivy Exec, an elite private online community of 2.5 million plus global business leaders seeking help with career advancement. In addition to providing content to help their members accelerate careers, Ivy Exec also focuses on B2B market research, and they team up with market research firms, consulting firms, and corporate research groups, and their research focuses largely on the C-suite and top management. Alex, welcome.
Thank you so much, Cam. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So I got to say, from your background there, I'd love to hear a little bit more. And what was the impetus for you to start your own business?
Yeah. It was sort of, it's interesting that we're talking about career advancement today on this discussion. And Ivy Exec sort of came out of my own personal struggle, if you will, to figure out what the heck do I want to do with my life. And so in many ways, what Ivy Exec offers, from a career development perspective, is very much sort of tied to what I was hoping to get when I was at that stage in my career. So the story of Ivy Exec starts with me, having gone through my undergrad, my plan, perhaps I am South Asian, and maybe this is sort of in my DNA, but my plan was to go the medical school route. Sure. And I had a degree in biology. I'd gotten admitted to medical school. I just didn't sign the dotted line, and I didn't know at the time why. But somehow I was able to convince my very loving parents that I had to sort of make the pitch to that it might be good for me to take a couple of years off before I went down the rabbit hole of medical school. And it just so happened that I was fortunate to learn about Teacher America as a 22-year-old. And as I was graduating, I was admitted into the program. It gave me an opportunity to relocate after college to New York City to teach middle school science in Harlem, of all places. So that biology degree did in fact come in handy, most certainly in that regard. It was interesting during my time with Teach for America, knowing that it was a two-year program, as I started to wrap up my time as a teacher in the classroom, I started to think about, well, what is it that I really want to do? Is it what I was told I ought to be doing? Medical school, becoming a doctor, or is there another path out there for me? And what path is that? And the more I started to think about it, I realized there weren't that many resources that were available that really spoke to me. And this is going back, Cam, to this is 2007, 2008, in terms of timeline. So companies were hiring left and right. I am the Facebook generation, if you will, in the sense that I'm the same age as Mark Zuckerberg. So that sort of appetite to maybe pursue an entrepreneurial journey was definitely an itch that I wanted to scratch. And I sort of leaned on my own experience and at the stage that I was at in my career. And so I was very lucky, as I wrapped up Teach for America, met my co-founder who was graduating from Columbia. And it was interesting. We were having this conversation around, what do we want to do with our career? Let's look at LinkedIn and see if they have any job opportunities that might be a good fit for us. At that time I had sort of come to the conclusion that I did not want to go to medical school. And then it was funny. I remember being in an elevator with Elena, my co-founder, our CEO. And I remember thinking, man, what if there was a really high quality version of LinkedIn? And then the light bulb went off. And by high quality version, what I was trying to refer to, and this sort of takes us to where we are as a business and what motivates us as an organization. We saw the path that LinkedIn was taking and that it would become the platform for high caliber business professionals, or if you will, any business professional globally, and that it would become sort of the Facebook of the professional network or the professional world. Yeah. So we thought to ourselves, what if that allows for more niche platforms to be created? And long story short, that is where Ivy Exec started, if you will. So if we look at Ivy Exec today and sort of the impetus for it, the idea was, what if we curate a high quality community of highly aspirational business professionals and then provide them with really relevant career resources, not just jobs, but the story behind what allows you to connect with the right job opportunity and connect with the right employer. In a way, we wanted to develop a platform that spoke to highly successful, high achieving business professionals at various stages in their career, not just when they were active in the job search. And so our business model, if you sort of look at that a little bit closer, yes, it looks similar to LinkedIn, but we have highly curated a community of 2.5 million members. We have no plans to be the size of LinkedIn. By all means, all of our members are leveraging LinkedIn. But our value proposition is very different. We offer curated content, information and insights that can help them be more successful in their current career, but also help them navigate those times in their career where they're looking to pivot or they're looking to make a change and make that switch. At the same time, we're able to, because of this highly vetted network, work with organizations that are represented by Skip. We work with many research entities, both in-house, independent research firms, consulting firms that say, wow, Ivy Exec, you have such a high quality network of business professionals and leaders that we otherwise are not able to tap into through traditional B2B panels. Can we partner with you so that we can tap into the research of your community? That has become a very strong value proposition for our membership, in addition to the career advancement resources that we offer them, in addition to the opportunities for them to have a platform to build visibility and to have what we call digitally organic peer-to-peer learning experiences through our platform. So in effect, where we are today is sort of a set of circumstances that have sort of occurred over the course of the past several years. And we never thought that research would be part of our value proposition to our community, but it certainly has. And so we're really excited to contribute to Skip in this way, if you will, from a career development perspective as well.
Yeah, no, that's great, Alex. And I think it was really helpful to me and I'm sure our listeners just to get a deeper picture of Ivy Exec. Cause there's as you mentioned, when you pop the hood, there's a lot going on there. Right. And I like how you kind of tied the connection between the network community part of the business and the research side. Now, so you previewed a couple moments ago, you know, our conversation today, and it's really going to be about finding that next job. And so not just the mechanics of interviewing and all that fun stuff, but we're in a crazy position here from a labor market perspective. In the US alone, we have north of 9 million jobs by the last BLS report. You know, vacancies in some industries are higher than they've ever been. And it is a job seekers market. We've heard from a lot of our members that they're excited to dust off the resume and to update the LinkedIn profile and to reach out to their networks and see what else is out there. And so would just love your thoughts before we get into the weeds here, just from a general perspective, when someone gets that fire in their belly that, hey, I want to see what else is out there. Where do you recommend that they start?
Yeah. It's a really great question. And like you said, Cam, there are opportunities aplenty at the moment, given all that's happened during the pandemic. From an employment perspective, if I can start there, there is huge demand for professionals in certain types of categories. With all the change that has occurred, the necessity to ground strategic business decisions off of research is so critical. We have seen a huge lift in the amount of research that we're doing on the B2B side. Part of that is organizations understanding more what skill sets, competencies are necessary to undergo what we can all call digital acceleration. At this point, I do not call it digital transformation anymore. With all the dynamics of what's happening in the labor market, talent is even more accessible because it's not tied to a brick and mortar location. I think it's pretty clear we can have a labor force within an organization that is not working out of just an office within, you know, central headquarters, if you will. What that leads to are opportunities that maybe one may not have thought about a year and a half ago. Geography is less of a barrier. I think there is also generally more opportunities for career transitioning. Perhaps it's going from one sector to another. Maybe it's going from one function to another. However, I think some very important starting points that one needs to think about, and this is the type of content that we're continuously trying to relay to our network within Ivy Exec, is to start by doing a very comprehensive self-assessment and really, really understanding what it is that you're looking for.
Okay.
Going introspectively as opposed to extra, sort of like externally looking at what's out there. There's definitely a time and a place to look at what are the jobs out there and who are the companies that are hiring. But it's very important to first doing your research on who you are and completing that self-assessment. What are my motivations? What are my goals? What am I capable of doing? What is it that I'm missing that I need to acquire in terms of learning and development in order for me to get to maybe the next step in my career? So I think just doing that self-assessment, this could be a discussion for another time without going to all the details now. It starts with that self-assessment. Then, and this is the part that's, I think, very important for any professional to understand. Once you've done that sort of self-assessment retrospective and sort of come to an understanding of who it is that you are and what you're looking for, then it's a question of what opportunities that are out there that are a good fit, as opposed to starting by looking at what job opportunities that are out there. It's more important what we would call understanding what categories of work are you interested in exploring. And so there's an interesting sort of model that of course, if anyone's had any questions around it, they can reach out to me or to Ivy Exec, and we can give more details around it. But for many that are looking to make a career switch, oftentimes it's sort of a transition into another type of field or a different type of function, some sort of transition, if you will. So what we want to advise is start by looking at sort of different sectors or categories of work. And essentially do a bit of a 2x2 matrix by looking at what you have done and what you're looking to do. Where is there less barrier to entry and more feasible, and what's possibly too far out there? And so if you do that sort of analysis, without going through the particulars right now, you might land on realizing that, okay, well, I have this experience in research within a certain type of environment now. I am interested in maybe going into a corporate structure. So that might be more feasible for me than to perhaps go into another category of research, if right. Research is something that you want to continue sort of focusing in on. When you do that sort of analysis of what we call a parallel path matrix, and you look at different categories and options, you'll come to prioritize certain types of work that you're interested in. And then once you've understood what type of work you're interested in doing, then you go to the company level. What are the companies out there that fit that type of work that you're looking for? Mm-hmm. And then create that sort of target list. Maybe it's a list of 2 to 4, 2 to 5 companies, but it's understanding the company before you start to explore job opportunities. Naturally, you will uncover what we call a hidden job market. But first, as opposed to starting with the jobs, start with companies, start by understanding what categories of work you're looking for. And all of that is much more efficiently done if you do that self-assessment on the front end. So again, very general there, Cam. I know there's more particulars that we could dive into there, but that would be my advice, you know, sort of looking at it from 20,000 feet down.
It's really fascinating because there's this phrase, Alex, in marketing, spray and pray, which is you know, kind of like it sounds, right? You just send out a bunch of emails and brochures, and it's you know, a lot of us, let's be honest, at one point in our lives, we've probably gone to Hot Jobs or Indeed or whatever site was around then, or Monster, if that's even still around, and just applied to kind of everything that seems even remotely good. But you're really saying, no, you got to think of this, think of yourself almost like a product, right? You know, what are your attributes? What are your features and benefits maybe? And then be really selective in where that might be a real asset. And so looking at a handful of companies, so a much more targeted perspective.
Yeah. And in a way, it's almost like if you do the hard work on the front end, the back end is going to be much more efficient and you'll be more productive with your time, as opposed to just applying to every job with 20 different companies and creating 20 different resumes and 20 different cover letters. You'll have a hit list of potentially six companies that you're really diving into and understanding who are the people that I am connected with that may have contacts at that company. How can I take advantage of those relationships to get into perhaps having an informational conversation with someone in the department that I am really looking to get into? So it becomes a much more focused strategy. And like you said, it's almost like you sort of productize this a little bit. And so how do you go to market? You start by being very research oriented, if you will, and knowing where to go and being very purposeful in your approach. And so all of that feeds into who you network with, how you network with those people, how you prepare your resume, what do you want to convey and communicate on LinkedIn? You only have one LinkedIn profile. You don't have 20, right? So a lot of the things that oftentimes are associated with branding materials, the resumes, the cover letters, and the LinkedIns, it's a lot easier to focus on building those assets for 3, 4, 5 companies, as opposed to just doing them randomly with every job that you see that are posted on job aggregators, like you were describing.
Yeah, no. So that's I think that's a great place to start. Is to you use the term productize, which I love, and you know maybe it's also just think of this like any work project that we would take on, right? If we got handed a project from a CEO, we would be really thoughtful at the beginning, right? We would do the planning. We wouldn't just jump in. And I like how you're saying to treat our careers in the same way. So Alex, you brought up the, networking a moment ago and, reaching out to people in your network to see if you have an in at a company. You know, we all have professional networks, whether we're in Ivy Exec or, certainly LinkedIn. What are some of the tips and best practices you can suggest for tapping into those networks, either to start a search or at different points throughout the search process?
Yeah. It's a really great question. And I think the one thing that I would want to convey today, oftentimes I think there's this mindset of what can the network do for me? And so who do I need to connect with that can help me? I think that's a completely wrong approach. I think it's much more valuable to build a network with those that you can help. Because a network is only as effective as the altruistic nature of the relationship. And so in a way, flipping it around and saying, it's not about what the network can do for me, but rather what can I do for my network? You naturally start to build equity with those people. So in a way, it's almost like, does it make sense for me to attend a networking event where I don't have opportunities to help or to contribute? If I'm able to spend my time, as an example, perhaps volunteering for a professional association and organizing an event, those connections that you make as a volunteer with the 3, 4, 5 people that are organizing or leaders of the association, those connections, by me contributing my time and helping them achieve their key objectives, I'm going to get so much more out of that, but it's me giving my time and contributing to others. That is the mindset that ultimately unlocks a lot of where I should be spending my time. Because as you said, Cam, there are a lot of options out there. One can join LinkedIn groups on LinkedIn.
Sure.
But if you just sort of join the LinkedIn group in order to then send cold direct messages to anyone in the LinkedIn group, that's not an effective use of your time. Rather, join the LinkedIn group. Now contribute to the group. Provide your perspective. Share research. Share learnings. Become a resource for others. And by doing that, naturally that network will be there for you when the time comes. And so that's the other caveat to this. You don't tap into the network just when you need something.
Yeah, yeah,
You build your network by giving something, and that takes time. So it's never too late. You know, even if one is in a career switch mode now, that doesn't mean you can't have that giving mentality now. It'll prove to be beneficial for you down the road if it's not immediate.
No, I like that, because I think, you know, on the purely practical side, there's the, you know, you'll get the best return by doing this, but also there is an element of just, you know, pay it forward, right? It's remembering that we're all people, and we're of course happy to do favors, but it's nicer if we can reciprocate. Yeah. And I'll tell you, from the Skip perspective, you know, we get asked a lot from, you know, whether it's, you know, corporations, research firms, they say, hey, you know, we have an open position. Do you know of anyone? Mm. And it's a lot easier for us to recommend someone when we've seen them, whether it's they've, you know, written an article for us or done a webinar. It's once someone's kind of stepped up and contributed, you can see them in action. And then it's a lot easier to say, hey, yeah, Alex is fantastic. You should reach out to him. So
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And there's so many different ways in which that can be done. You know, I've personally volunteered to moderate virtual conferences, you know, and I might have a very minor role, but it's still me giving some of my time and contributing in ways. So it doesn't have to be a huge lift. It could be the little things that actually make a big difference across whatever communities and associations and groups that one feels like could be benefited by their time. Again, sort of flipping that model around and not thinking of it as what can that network do for me, but what can I do for that network, that community, that association.
Yeah, well, that's good. And so I've done my introspection on myself, and I mm-hmm. figured out, you know, I'll use myself as an example here. You know, okay, great. I want to do more nonprofit stuff, and so I've looked and followed your advice, Alex, and narrowed it down to 4 or 5 nonprofits. I've, you know, done some networking and you know, contributed to my community and, you know, given a little back. And also I've gotten some into organizations, and I get asked the dreaded question, hey, great, Cam, send me your resume. And I'm thinking, holy moly, I haven't updated my resume in 5 years when I got this job. So, you know, obviously lots of blog posts about resumes, do's and don'ts, but, you know, what are some of your tried and true tips for making the resume really solid?
Yeah. And it's such a great question. There's a lot of resources out there, right? So there's not a limited amount of things that are out there. And I will say many things are counter to one another. So be careful about where you're getting your resources. Think about what your areas of interest are in terms of work. Understand those areas of work. Maybe it's a certain type of industry or a certain type of function, et cetera. So first I would say, if you go back to the homework that you did at the beginning, you've perhaps identified some general areas of work. And I don't use the term industry here because I kind of want to allow us all to sort of come up with what are the different categories of work that we might want to pursue. You do that feasibility analysis around those different areas. Yeah. Then you want to understand, as an example, if I'm in graphic design, then chances are you will want to have a pretty colorful and graphically friendly resume template that you're using. But if I'm approaching a financial institution, don't go there.
Right? Exactly.
So my first word of advice would be, understand the areas of work that you're interested in. Then understand in that area of work, what is considered an acceptable version of a resume. Some areas of work might be okay with a 2-page resume. Others would laugh at you. So there isn't one do and one don't. That's universal. It all depends upon what are your areas of work. That being said, I just wanted to highlight just some sort of key things to think about. And I'm not going to say these are do's or these are don'ts. I mentioned a couple things that I wanted to sort of go back to. One, colorful and graphic templates. Be very careful about, if you were to go that route, what type of work are you looking to do, right? So if things are very graphically oriented in your resume, keep in mind that many industries, many organizations, they use an applicant tracking system, what's called an ATS, to collect the resume. So you might be going to the company website, but the company website, their recruitment technology is operated by a third party, and that third party is basically scraping data from the resume. So that ATS, you kind of want to have an ATS friendly version of a resume where it's really just quantifiable information that can be extracted pretty easily through a general, what would be called a resume parser. So that's just something to keep in mind. If you're going to go the creative route, be very careful about where that creative resume is going. There is a second general trend, Cam, around building functional resumes. A functional resume is one that's not sharing content in a chronological order, but more from a what have I done, what are the contributions that I've made, and sort of organizing it more from a functional perspective. So one could have some experience in marketing, but maybe their title doesn't reflect it. Maybe their role and responsibilities from a job description that they have held does not reflect it, but they're looking to make a pivot into a marketing role. A functional resume could be an appropriate way to sort of articulate that switch that you're looking to make, and providing evidence from specific projects that show that, yes, I am a marketer, even if my title is general manager, for example. But again, keep in mind that a functional resume isn't always the right way to go. One way many experienced professionals want to lessen concern around them having too much experience. Yep. I'll be very honest, ageism is real. Companies sometimes look at one's experience and draw the conclusion this person might be too old for the role that we're looking to fill. And so a functional resume takes away the chronological order of things and allows you to highlight your contribution. So that's another use case. So those are the two main things I would say, Cam. There are other things that obviously can be discussed, and you know, I'd be happy to welcome people to go to our website to find some additional details around it.
That's great. And I tell you, I couldn't agree more about the functional resume. I once years ago was interviewing, and it's funny. I talked to someone actually at the hiring organization, and they said, you know what? You should do this functional resume. So I spent probably 2 hours completely reworking my resume. And what I didn't think was this was going through an executive search firm. And the executive search firm, they took one look at this resume and they shook their head, said, no, this is nonsense. Yeah. We don't do these things. So I you know, thought I knew my audience, but I certainly didn't. Another underscoring your point about doing your research.
Absolutely. And I'll only mention that, I mean, to that point also, you know, in working with executive search firms, sometimes they might approach you through whatever source they had, right? And the resume is an important asset. Without a doubt, what I would recommend any of us do now, include your LinkedIn URL in the resume. Let's not lose sight of the fact that they're assuming, of course, you've spent time just, you know, keeping your LinkedIn up to date, just throw in that LinkedIn URL, just like you would your email address, right? Yeah. It can be sort of above the fold on that first page. It's just another entry point for recruiters, search firms, external or internal recruitment professionals to be able to learn a little bit more about you.
So yeah, let's go to LinkedIn. So, you know, it, like many of us, I'll check out someone on LinkedIn. I get an invitation, a connection request, and some folks it's, you know, I've worked at this company for 20 years. Here's my last title and nothing else. Others, it is, you know, it's like almost like a live blog of everything they've ever done. How should we be using LinkedIn? Do we copy our resume? What does a good LinkedIn profile look like these days?
Exactly. It's a really good question. And it's interesting. I have peers and colleagues that approach me with this question, and I remember one of my good friends works at a top three, you know, financial institution, and you know, he's looking to make a switch. He's in financial services. They have to be very careful what their online presence looks like. That being said, he can't necessarily talk about all the deals that he's structured or some of the numbers in terms of assets under management, et cetera. But one thing I was just surprised by was the fact that he didn't have a photo, one thing to note is that the resume is a resume. The LinkedIn profile is not a resume. So let's try to distinguish those two things. And so when we think about LinkedIn, it's almost like it's a way to sort of you're building a presence on a platform, and that presence doesn't have to be a regurgitation of your resume. Right. So if we think of it as, okay, what sort of presence do you want to have on LinkedIn that could be beneficial for you when it comes to seeking out that job opportunity? Number one, have a photo. Number two, optimize your headline and have it be something that is more than just your job title. As an example, what's important to me as a professional is that anyone that sees my professional profile understands that my main responsibility is husband and father. Yeah, so that's what my headline says, husband, father, entrepreneur. Hmm. That's who I am. I want that to be presented. It's sometimes hard to do that in a resume, but yeah, LinkedIn gives you a little bit more flexibility to sort of show a little bit more of who you are. Right. And who you are as a person, not just as a professional. And so I think my main takeaway would be, whether it's through the picture, whether it's through that initial headline that's right below your name, mm-hmm. have it convey something that is you, inherently you, authentically you. Ultimately, you want to work for employers that appreciate the authentic you. Yeah. And let's not run away from that. Rather, obviously, circumstances can vary from one case to another, but I would much rather go 6 months without finding a job opportunity in the hopes of securing that employer that really authentically appreciates who I am. Right. And I think we all now live in a world where that is ever more important for many reasons, than to just jump in and present myself as someone who is not who I am, but it gets me the job a little bit faster. Will you be there long term? I don't know, but there's a smaller likelihood of you sticking around for a period of time. So those would be like two specific things. The other thing that I'll mention about LinkedIn, Cam, is that it goes back to the point about networking. Mm-hmm. Leverage LinkedIn, not just when you're looking for a job, but be active, be present, share content, share research, share anytime I am involved in any conference presentation, as long as I have permission to share some of the details that I presented, I'll throw it up as a document that's part of my profile. It sort of helps round out who I am as a professional, again, beyond just my responsibilities, but it shows my interest. I can share my content. It's sort of building a personal professional brand. And I think that's the approach to take, because ultimately you're telling a story of who you are, and that can be really amplified through LinkedIn, and that can be a bit limiting through resumes alone.
Yeah. So we talked about ATS, the amazing software that scrapes our resumes, and whatever the LinkedIn algorithm is, there's obviously some version two. So,
yeah,
does the same logic about thinking, having basically a keyword optimization strategy, I guess, man, we're all marketers today. Does that apply towards LinkedIn too?
Yes, definitely, okay. Definitely. And so this is where, once you've built a LinkedIn profile and you've built out your job search strategy and you've identified certain types of positions that you're interested in. And again, it doesn't start there, but now you start to feed in a few different locations within a profile. So make sure those keywords are represented in your profile. Those are searchable. Skills that you tag yourself to are also searchable. LinkedIn groups that you join are also searchable. Pretty much anything that's in your LinkedIn profile, any recruiter that's using LinkedIn will be able to conduct a keyword search or a filter around that section of your profile. So it's great for one to have recommendations. Yeah. Those are additional keywords, but be very strategic about taking every section of the profile and incorporating those details that will show the match, both from an automated perspective, whether it be an ATS, or from a recruiter perspective, when they do those searches on their end, when they use LinkedIn Recruiter and they're searching, they're able to do searches that say, I want professionals that are located in these markets that have these functional backgrounds. And let's go ahead and filter for the people that are part of XYZ LinkedIn group. Plus, let's make sure that they have these skill sets. And then they're able to conduct skill sets that and be able to filter for what we call skill tags, right? So tags, any skills that you attach yourself to are basically tags that are searchable. So the more robust your profile with those keywords through the different categories within the profile, the more likely you are to appear in the search results that recruiters are conducting on their end.
So maybe one last question quickly before we actually, ace the job interview and get the job is the dreaded cover letter.
Yes.
You got to do it. We get it. We don't want to regurgitate the resume. Any kind of tried and true tips on ACE in the cover letter?
Yeah. It's it's such an interesting discussion point, because I've had colleagues, I've had, you know, friends that have said, cover letter doesn't matter. I can just use it one template and be done with it. The answer is not really. So I guess the main take home message that I would give, Cam, around the cover letter is, it won't make you, but it will break you. So by that, what I'm saying is, it's important to have your cover letter convey that you are an attentive professional. You want to be generally very to the point around what your objectives are and why you are reaching out and expressing your interest in this position. Hit the highlights. Look at the job position that you're applying to. Make sure that you are hitting the key points, the key marks that are in the cover letter. It's almost as if those are the things that are prerequisites.
Yeah.
It's necessary, but not sufficient in securing the job opportunity. If you don't do these basic things with the cover letter, it'll break you, going back to my little, you know, rhyme there. Do it, be attentive. Don't spend hours on the cover letter, to be honest. It's much better use of your time to be present, leverage your network, seek out opportunities to contribute and help build those conversations, rather than spending hours building a super, super customized cover letter. Have a couple, you know, I mentioned that, you know, if you have four different work categories, types of work that you're looking to do, have four templates, slightly tailor them, submit it, and then move on. You won't earn the job opportunity through the cover letter, but you could easily lose it if you send them something that's just a run of the mill that isn't addressing some of these points that I just mentioned.
Yeah. So my guess is that, like the interview, like everything else, we don't want to kind of fly by the seat of our pants. We want to be really, you know, methodical, right, and prep So again, this could be an hour podcast. Any tried and true tips for acing, especially that first interview and that dreaded tell us about yourself question?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think two points that I'll mention. And again, I think these could be podcasts in and of themselves. But I think the first thing is, I'll start with one and then go to the other. So first is, I think we all have this baseline thought of the interview as being just about you, the candidate.
Yeah.
And in reality, if you flip it around again, I find myself sort of being counter to conventional wisdom on a lot of these things. And I think that kind of sets the candidate apart across other, you know, potential candidates that are out there.
Yeah.
Think about the company first when you're preparing for the interview. What problems are the companies addressing as a business? Mm-hmm. What are some of the strategic initiatives that the company is involved with? What are some of the challenges to those strategic initiatives? Dive deep into the organization. Talk to people that have insights into those organizations so that you walk into the interview with a wealth of knowledge to convert that interview into a conversation.
Yep.
At the end of the day, if the interview is an interview, one has missed out on the opportunities for this to be a conversation, particularly when it comes to positions where leadership is expected, right? So it's one thing to be interviewing for an analyst role right out of undergrad. In our case, within the context of our discussion and the audience that we're talking to, it's about the organization at the end of the day. This company is hiring for this position. So you want to make it very clear that you've done your homework and that you have a deep interest in helping them address some of these challenges at the organizational level or at the strategic level. When you approach it from that perspective, it will naturally create opportunities for you to talk about yourself and your background and some of the things that you have done. To do that, it's less, in my opinion, and there are always opinions around this that I want to admit can be counter to what I'm about to mention. I naturally am a storyteller.
Yeah.
I like to ground my experiences, my achievements by telling stories. We all know that stories resonate. They tend to remain in the memory of people much longer than just pure data. So we're biologically programmed to retain information when they're told through stories than just sheer information. So yes, I can roll and rattle off stats of success and growth, but if I don't give the story the context and build a climax around that, I likely will not be remembered. And at the end of the day, as a candidate, you want to be remembered. So if you can convert that interview into storytelling, to do that, make it about the company first, make it about the position first, make it about them first, then make it about you. And again, I think that that's sort of a central theme that I'm trying to convey in many of these areas that are focused within the job search process.
That is fantastic. And again, I think, you know, as a reformed marketer, I'll bring it back again. It's the, you know, no one buys a car these days, at least not many people, because of the, you know, the horsepower.
Right.
You know, I don't even know what it means, but if you say, hey, you know, the benefit to you as the consumer is that you can go fast or that you'll, you know, use less gas. It's like, I, you know, contextualize the feature for the other party. It'll, as you say, you'll get remembered.
Exactly.
That's great. So storytelling. Any other thoughts on the interview, especially the tell me what you make now question?
Yeah,
that's always a tough one.
That's a really great question. It's the discussion of salary negotiations. It's essentially, it's funny when you get that question, it's more of how are you going to play the salary negotiations game? And for the employer, the sooner they know what your number is, the more leverage they have. It's the opposite for us, the candidates. The longer you're able to push off sharing a number and what your expectations are, first and foremost, I might need to be corrected on this. From what I understand, an employee or a prospective employer is not allowed to ask what you make.
Yeah, so if you get the question by state, a lot of states, it can vary.
Yeah, it can vary. Generally, I think there is an understanding that from the employer's perspective that they ought not to ask what you make, but they will try to get to that type of question in a, you know, in a circumventing type of way. What's your desired salary? What is your expected income, et cetera, right? So what you as a candidate want to do is delay that response. How to do that, that's a separate discussion, and we can certainly cover that in more detail, but why is it important to delay? I'd like to talk about that. As you go from the gatekeeper initially, it's going to be, you know, perhaps someone that's on the recruitment team, HR. They are not the hiring manager, right? The hiring manager is the one that said, okay, I need this position filled and for these reasons, and they get approval from the company. What you're trying to do through the interview process is build equity. You're building equity and building interest in you, not filling the position. So we have to go from thinking, we want the employer to stop thinking about the position and start to think of you, Cam, or you, Alex, as that talent that could be really beneficial for the organization. Yeah. To do so, you want to advance through the interview process as far as you can. You want to ultimately get to, ideally, you can get to the point where you have interviewed with the hiring manager. You've had several conversations. Every interview that you have, you're building equity and you're gaining leverage when you get to that point. There is a lot of content around how do you get to that number? Certainly there's a fair market value number, and that's something that can be researched well in advance, but there are tactics and strategies that can get you to a point where when it's time to share a number, you share a number that will allow you to land where you want to land if negotiations is available, right? And one thing I will mention, there are many instances, what the term that we like to use is called a gunshot offer, where the employer says, we're excited to have you on board, but because of pressing needs, we're going to give you an offer. You have 24 hours to let us know.
Yeah. Oh,
I it's a very difficult situation to be in that point.
Yeah.
Again, it could be a different discussion, but what I will say is if that company really, really wants you, it will not be a gunshot offer. And then I'll leave it at that. There will always be opportunities if you've earned that equity and you've built that leverage where in their mind, they ought to be saying, this is a candidate that really could make a huge impact for us as an organization. Let's make sure that we build a compensation package that they would appreciate. And more, and this is again, a different discussion for another time. I think us, especially with budget cuts that are happening across the board, despite the fact that there is more hiring, companies are having to be more lean. And now you're not only competing with candidates that are based locally with you, there's a labor force out there that is available virtually that you're also competing with. So what is it that's important to you? Is a flexibility important to you? Is it opportunities to take part in other areas of the business important to you? Maybe the number isn't as important to you as it once was. So doing that introspection early on and sort of landing on what you feel like is an ideal compensation model, I think is important so that you walk in, you know, eventually talking to the right companies that sort of align where you might want to be, if you will. So there's some thoughts there on that point. It's a very difficult topic to discuss and, you know, could be a separate discussion for another time as well.
Well, it's a good reminder that, you know, you want to have those conversations, whether you characterize them as tough conversations or not, though, but just like with what you said a moment ago, Alex, about the LinkedIn, you know, search, you know, the objective here isn't to get a job, any job as quickly as possible. You want to show a little bit of your personality, as you mentioned. The goal here is to get a job where you can be happy for hopefully at least a couple of years. Right. And then in order to do that, it's not just ace in the interview. It's, you know, learning as much about the opportunity as you can so that you can verify as much as anyone ever can that it's a fit. And so you're really talking about shifting the balance of power so that it's a little more neutral rather than hiring entity heavy, which I think in so many of our, you know, our prior experiences, that's usually how it works.
Exactly. And in aggregate, and I'll say this is sort of the key takeaway that I kind of want to make sure that is conveyed to those that are listening. Mm-hmm. Yes, we might be in an employee or what we can call a candidate driven market. There will be instances where the pendulum swings the other way and it's more of an employer driven market.
Yeah.
In any market, candidate driven or employer driven, one still must build equity through the interview process and through the job search process. So that would be the one thing that I think is a central thread across these different topics that we've talked about, Cam. And if one does the homework, you identify the key areas of work that you're looking to maybe explore, and then you really lean in and focus on building a network that you have supported so you can lean and get their support when the time comes, you'll build the right type of marketing assets and ultimately do really well in the interview because you've done your homework, both for yourself introspectively as well as the employer. If you've approached the interview process thinking about the employer first as opposed to you.
Love it. Well, Alex, that is a perfect place to end. I want to thank you for an awesome conversation. I took a ton of notes. Hopefully our listeners will as well.
Yeah.
Make sure to visit Alex and Ivy Exec at ivyexec.com. In our show notes, we'll make sure to include links to some of the resources that Alex mentioned. I'm certainly interested in checking out a few of those. So Alex, really appreciate you sharing these awesome tips with us today.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Cam. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Great. Till next time, that was Skip and Telecast. Have a good day.